As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Hold on to your butt.
Ah! Here we go now. Got to make this Thursday a screamer. How about some funk? That ain't bad. That ain't bad. From Boston to Denver and every town in between, including the Twin Towns, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and all throughout the Upper Midwest, this is 9 to Noon at FM 100.3 The Fan, KFAN.com. Go on and download that free iHeartRadio app. We can move on up together. Say what? I got Nacho Lieber in studio today. He is Nacho Lieber. He's my Lieber, and he's in studio at 955. I'm pretty excited about that. Hockey and Horsies with KG and BA. 1055. A lovely young lady named Lindsay Young from Vikings.com. With Bud Grant's Skull Stories, 935. And if I feel up to it, if I feel like sharing and or opening a vein, Skull Soul Stories, 1135. Good morning. When it comes to sharing, you have to be up for it. It just can't happen. You just gotta feel it. You gotta feel it. Like becoming one with Rube Nation, which is generally not a problem with your Rubidity leader. This is your Rubidity leader, the Fan. That probably will take place at 11:35. Hopefully you find it touching. Speaking of touching, our relationship with Brian Heating and Cooling, second to none. Doing whatever it takes to fuel the fan. Thus, yours truly is broadcasting and broad chasing live from the Bryant Heating and Cooling Studios at FM 100.3 The Fan. And I'm in need of just a little help right now. While I was watching the greatest duo in the history of music, it's going to get funky. Told you. As I was watching the greatest duo in the history of music kill it in St. Paul, high-level sporting activity was taking place. While I was witnessing 70-year-old men harmonize for profit, those significantly younger were leaving their fans and those who loved them all wide-eyed.
As the puck comes out towards center, flipped in, and now the Knights come the other way. It's a pass toward Marchessault. He gets to the puck, works in front. He scores! Jonathan Marchessault, another backhander, and the Knights lead 1-0. 35 seconds into game three.
98.9 KRLV.
What a Las Vegas turnaround. Wish we could get into this spot just one time. We being us, being them, being the Wild. Had to be a fan at T-Mobile saying, "You guys make my dreams come true."
Puck around behind center and try Tuck. He scores! Alex Tuck, 3-1 Knights.
Marc-Andre Fleury, what a man-eater. What a puck-eater. Nordo, What'd you like about this game?
Well, first of all, if anyone was annoyed by how Nashville fans bang on the boards and get loud and are the antithesis of sit there with your arms crossed and wait for great hockey to happen,
they ain't snobs.
You don't want to watch Vegas fans, okay? The hockey on the ice takes a back seat to how raucous that Vegas 702 party gets when things are hopping at that arena in Sin City.
Why you gotta knock Wyndham and his family like that, man? He's about ready to take care of you.
I'm not knocking it. I adore it.
And he listens to the podcast or the free iHeartRadio app.
He certainly does, and I'll see him a week from today, PA.
Your bottle service just got killed.
Alex Tuck, by the way, 3 years younger than Nino Niederreiter, significantly cheaper than Nino Niederreiter. And 37 points in his first big spot full season opportunity.
Good
notched
God.
His fifth goal in a big spot last night, fifth goal of the playoffs. That's going to sting a little bit for us Wild fans wondering what could have been with that power forward potentially being in the Minnesota Wild mix. Marc-Andre Fleury, this series could go seven. At home, it's going to be tough for Winnipeg to beat the Golden Knights in that arena.
Yeah,
but Fleury had to stand on his head, made a massive diving save in a big spot. Shifley is absolutely on fire. Speaking of contract v. contracts, Shifley, Winnipeg owes him $6 million a year for the next 6 years. He's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Minnesota Wild owes Zach Parise $7.5 million for seven more years. He turns 34 in July.
Why you got to tear Sickman down like that when he's already down about the way it ended?
I'm just looking at things and figuring out how the Minnesota Wild, making the playoffs six straight years, can get better. And I'm jealous and envious of what the Winnipeg Jets have. But this is going to be fun. I think Winnipeg could easily come back and win game four, but this is going to be a very, very long series, Mr. Allen.
Marc-Andre Fleury, is he a man-eater or a puck-eater? Let's skate on over to the NBA, where the Houston Rockets said, Steph, I can't go for that.
Underhand dish, quarter three to Tucker all the way, and another one! Little razzle-dazzle from Chris Paul to P.J. Tucker in a sweet spot, the left corner, and he buried the three. Six in a row right back for Houston.
KBMA, AM 790, Houston.
Easy to house a rich girl when you crush the champs in a conference finals game.
The Rockets rebound and respond in emphatic fashion here in game two, as they rout the Warriors to even up this series at a game apiece. The final score tonight from Toyota Center, Houston 127, Golden State 105.
I'm chasing the box score. I have box score-related takes. I didn't see a second of this game. You being compensated to follow sports on a game-by-game basis. What'd you see? What'd you think?
While you were offering up hashtag cute tweets with your periscopes and your videos, just giddy little Paul Allen at the X last night enjoying music immortality.
Yes, sir.
I was watching P.J. Tucker go 5 of 6 from deep.
Whoa.
Defensive juggernaut all night long. Eric Gordon with 27 off the bench.
Yeah.
I will say this, and maybe box score-related takes, you can agree or disagree, and you did see game one. I think Harden's been really bad for about the last 4 or 5 games. Now, he gets to 27 points, but he's not doing the things like getting to the line, taking a bunch of free throws, only shot 6 last night. He's hucking up shots. He was 3 of 15 from deep. I mean, it took Klay Thompson and Steph Curry having about as bad a playoff game as I can remember them playing for that lead to get to where it got. And then when there was 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they're down 16, 19 points, suddenly they're like, well, Durant's going to get a couple of buckets, but we're going to regroup and get home for game three and get back after it.
Looks to me like Steph is 0 for 2 in this playoff series. And as 9 to noon analyzed into said series, when the talker last week was, what do you do with Clint Capela? I mean, he's elite defensive guy, outplayed Cat Cred, outplayed Rudy Gobert in consecutive series. It's in chasing the box score and reading some recaps, it's almost like you can't play him. I mean, it's almost like for Houston to have a chance to win more games, to even to win another game or potentially win the series, you got to cut way back on Clint Capela, not play Ryan Anderson, and go with like 7 or 8 guys. I mean, you got Eric Gordon and maybe Gerald Green for some energy. but it's just mismatched terrorism when you use Clint Capela. He's missing layups and everything. So good for Houston. Hopefully they make it an interesting series.
Capela only had three shots last night in 31 minutes. Just a guy on the court, really.
Then we come home to a pitcher who is out of touch. Say it isn't so, Lance Lynn.
Fowler, base hit into center. He needed it. So did the Cardinals. A two-out base hit, 2-0, St. Louis. Thank you, Dexter Fowler.
Thank you, Fox Sports Midwest, for that Lance Lynn-related L highlight.
Private eyes are not appreciating our new guy. He's minus 360 to have his role usurped by Fernando Romero in a month or so. What's the long play with Lance Lynn? That's my question. Now, Rosie had some interesting commentary on the wildly successful, highly touted this morning, 5:30 to 9. Where he said he chatted with like a Cardinals Vox who remembers Lance Lynn from his days balling with the Redbirds. And like first thing that the Vox said was, he's out of shape. I mean, he looks like a different guy. So late report, you know, minimal spring training, no spring, whatever. Maybe he can whip himself into shape. But my question is, what's the long play with Lance Lynn? Courtesy of Aaron Gleeman's Twitter. Lance Lynn threw 8 starts. Last year, 45 innings. This year, 37 innings. Last year, 18 runs. This year, 31 runs. Strikeout rate about the same. Threw 8 starts last year. He walked 9% of his guys. That's up to 16 this year. As the Twins techie writes, way too many walks, obviously, but the biggest difference is in batting average on balls in play. 220 last year, 394 this year. That's freaking ridiculous. I don't care if he's out of shape and, you know, the negatives want to focus on Cinnabon, kimonos, basements, and Miguel Sano. Almost double the runs and walks. We needed good pitching and didn't get it. And Cleveland beat Gardy, so now we're a game and a half in arrears. Is it an awful take to wonder if Phil Hughes needs to snatch a start just to see what it looks like? I mean, just a start, a spot start. Is it an awful take? It probably is. But Big Irv ain't ready. You got Romero, Romero. Wherefore art thou, Romero? It's kicking ass every single start. It's long form baseball. I get it. And we're looking at small sample size. But through three, absolutely looks like he belongs. Main man Gibby might be best in the rotation to this point. Barrios breaking off that curve in the Cardinals game. He's Barrios. He's not going anywhere. Odorizzi has a little bulldog to him.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the immediate and or long play with Lance Lynn?
I think the long play is that they're going to stick it out. I mean, the problem with Phil Hughes is Phil Hughes has been sitting in that bullpen. He's not even getting adequate relief opportunities, mm-hmm. whether it goes to extra innings and something happens where they got to bring Fernando Rodney in instead. I mean, Phil Hughes isn't down at AAA getting rehab starts, getting 4 or 5 inning stretches. He's just chilling in there, warming up and cooling down in the bullpen. Yeah. So that's not an option. Trevor May, probably more suited eventually to be a closer than a starter in the first place. I think he might be slated end of the month to start throwing potentially even up here with the big club. So I think the long play, or the immediate play rather, is
you stick it out.
You got to stick it out.
Everybody is going great guns except Lance Lynn.
Yep.
I'm sure he feels awful, so 9 to noon chooses to support him next time he goes, and maybe he'll turn the beat around. The champs are back in action Sunday at Target Center. Let's give the Minnesota Lynx some love next segment. Nordo produces, and I'm Paul Allen. From the Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios, you're listening to 9 to Noon.
Lifelong listener of your show, and I'm also a Vikings fan and an alcoholic. I'd like to shed some light on this.
On the Fan.
Nope. Yep. Oh, yeah. What a night. Sunday, Target Center, immortality back in play. champion Lynx back in action Sunday at Target Center. Joining us now, Brad Ryder, Vice President of Communications for the Timberwolves and Lynx. Bradley, it's Paul Allen. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good to talk to you as always.
The champions are back in play this weekend. Your thoughts?
Sunday will be a fun day at Target Center for sure. It'll be the first time that the Lynx will be back at Target Center since renovation. We're going to have a ring ceremony. We're asking people to be here by 3:30 if they want to witness the ring ceremony and the banner unveiling. Tip is set for 4 o'clock facing the LA Sparks. I teased this a little bit with your producer. I'm not even sure if you're aware of this, but I've got some breaking news for you.
Whoa.
I'm not even sure this is out on Twitter yet. We just found this out. We just got this confirmed literally within the last hour.
Wait a second. We traded Maya Moore?
No, nothing that dramatic.
Cheryl Reeve is going to coach the Milwaukee Bucks?
Cheryl Reeve is taking over 9 to noon on KFAN.
Why the hell would you say something like that? I mean, it's not like I say Bob Hagen is going to become the Vice President of Communications for the Wolves and Lynx.
That would be a step up, probably. Anyway. Montel Jordan is going to be our halftime act.
Whoa.
For the game on Sunday, just confirmed. So
cue up.
This is how we do it, and come on out.
This is how Brad does it now. That's pretty good, man. Well, congratulations on that, and thanks for sharing the breaking news 9 to noon.
Yeah, you bet. So anyway, we have tickets available. We've opened the upper level bowl, which we typically don't do for Lynx games for demand for the game.
Yeah.
Go to lynxbasketball.com if you want to check out the ticket availability for Sunday.
Bradley, I do not know who runs Lynx Twitter, but I saw something this morning that was very cool. In that, I guess general managers throughout the WNBA voted on, like, I don't know, best players, best teams, most likely to win a title.
Yep.
And I guess the GMs privately came together saying LA Sparks should win the title this year. Lynx Twitter was, quote tweeted it, retweeted with the quote and put LOL.
Yep. So sometimes the funniest things are the most subtle things, aren't they? That was pretty good.
That was spectacular. Well, good job, whoever did that.
Yep.
By the way, Sunday, not only with this is how we do it guy there, but the upper bowl open. Speaking of the Sparks, it's a rematch of the 2017 WNBA Finals. This sounds like a humdinger.
Yeah, and it's not only, you know, a rematch of this past year, but the last couple of years as well. It's been the two teams really who have for lack of a better term, dominated this league the last, you know, 3-4 years. So it'll be fun. It should be a fun atmosphere at Target Center. Again, you know, a lot of our Lynx fans are crossover Timberwolves fans too, but the ones who are not and are coming back to Target Center for the first time after being displaced over to St. Paul last summer at XL Energy Center will get a chance to enjoy the brand new Target Center that the Wolves fans were able to enjoy during the Timberwolves season. So it'll be a fun day for those folks as well.
Yeah, and with the Sparks in town, again, back-to-back finals against said team, it's cool if you're going Sunday because it probably took all of us that long to learn how to pronounce to say Agumake.
Tip starts at 4. It might take most of the day before you get here to do that, yeah.
Ladies are back at renovated Target Center. You touched on it, but that I'm not going to say it was difficult or awkward, and they made the most of it last year. But, I mean, they're back to the true home court advantage.
Yeah, but the nice thing about going to St. Paul, again, touching on this a little bit, is we were honestly able to grow our fan base across the river quite a bit. I mean, we were able to do a lot of things from a business perspective that we weren't really sure of displacing from Target Center and going over to St. Paul. We've got a lot of new season ticket accounts over across the river over in St. Paul now that have joined us back at Target Center. So, you know, it was challenging from a business perspective and putting on the games and doing all the things that we do over here, but it is nice to be back at our home, back on our home floor, and back where we belong over at Target Center.
So 3:30 Target Center for the ring ceremony and everything going on with that. Sunday at Target Center, lynx.com for information. Rematch with the Sparks. Agumake should be cool. But there are celebrations transpiring throughout the season, celebrating 20 seasons of Lynx basketball, right?
Yes, it's the 20th season of Lynx basketball. A lot of different things going on. The All-Star Game is at Target Center this year as well. On Saturday, July 28th, the WNBA All-Star Game will be coming to Minneapolis, so that'll be a fun weekend planned around that. And then, you know, we've got a lot of different highlighted home games, a military appreciation night, fan appreciation night, We Are Women night. All those dates and information on all those things can be found also on LynxBasketball.com.
LynxBasketball.com. Last one, Brad Ryder, VP of Communications, T-Wolves and Lynx. What's it like working with Cheryl Reeve?
Cheryl is one of the elite coaches, really, not only, you know, in women's basketball, but in basketball, period. And Cheryl commands respect, you know, no matter what she's doing, no matter where she is. And she she's, you know, her record really does speak for itself. I mean, she's, you know, not only it's a lot of people think it's easy to do what she does, but to keep the chemistry and the vibe and the passion for winning and wanting to win. A lot of teams you see, you know, they win a year and then maybe take a dip and then maybe come back a few years later. She's been able to maintain this level of excellence with this group of players. You know, not one, not two, not three, but, you know, going on 6-7 years here, and that speaks to her talent, and that speaks to how she can manage the organization.
You're an elite basketball mind. Who do you like to get to the NBA Finals and why?
You know, before last night, I probably would have gone with the crowd and gone with Golden State, but, you know, Houston was awfully impressive last night. I think that series is going to go seven. I do think that series is going to go 6 or 7 games.
Whoa.
And it's hard to argue with what Boston's been doing, you know, to Cleveland. I mean, that team is just clicking on all cylinders. You know, they're up 2-0. Cleveland's going to have to win 4 of the next 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to bet against Boston in the Eastern Conference as well. But, you know, I think whoever gets Boston, I'll say this, whoever gets Boston in the NBA Finals, it's not going to be, you know, everybody think is assuming that Golden State or Houston is just going to roll over Boston. I don't think that's the case. I think that team knows how to play team basketball. They know how to play team defense, and I don't think it's going to be a sweep or a 5-game series like a lot of people think if it is Boston against one of those two teams.
My man, anytime you need anything, you tap on 9 to noon. Best of luck with the season opener, 4 o'clock Target Center this Sunday. Lynx and L.A. Sparks, LynxBasketball.com for information, all right?
Sounds good, brother. Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay.
Brad Ryder, VP Communications, Timberwolves, and Lynx. Skull stories with my favorite L involving coaching immortality Bud Grant next.
You're listening to PA.
In those days, they wouldn't go to hell for $5 more like they do today.
On the Fan.
Tonight I'm gonna break away. Just to wait and see.
It haunts coaches a lot sometimes if they lose. Never haunted me, because before you learn how to win, you got to learn how to lose. I mean, you can't, I don't mean that as a positive to losing, but if you can handle the losing, then you can ascend. But if you can't handle the losing, you descend. There's going to be, no matter all the things you do, sometimes you're not going to work. I can honestly say I've never looked at a Super Bowl game on film after the game. I'm looking to the next game or the next year or the next play or something like that. I'm not a little backward looking. I can't second guess. I got enough second guessers without second guessing yourself. I never did that. Any decisions we ever made, hey, if they're right or wrong, it's over.
Good job, Nordo. The producer found that snippet from a very, very interesting and entertaining conversation Dan Barrero had a couple of days ago with former Vikings coach Bud Grant. You can listen back to that via podcast at KFAN.com and to chat about said coaching immortality and share some stories. My favorite L has arrived in studio. Her name, Lindsay Young. She is a writer for Vikings.com and does a lot of content-related work for the Minnesota Vikings. And my favorite L has arrived in studio. Good morning, Ms. Young.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. What exactly do you do for the old.com?
So I am one of the three writers for Vikings.com. So any piece of content that you see On the website is written by either myself or Craig Peters or Eric Smith.
Yeah.
And then we also work on the hard copy publications too. So if you're at a game at US Bank Stadium and you have the game program there, the content in there is written by us, the team yearbook, things like that. But most of the stuff is on .com.
And the common thread with said trio is all of you are beaten down by Wobby.
Absolutely.
I mean, just absolutely driving those staff writers as if he were the editor-in-chief at, like, the New York Times.
Exactly.
Right? I wish you a good night.
And we leave that on a good note. Explain what we are discussing here today.
Yeah, so I am kind of unrolling a content series called Letters to Bud that's basically been 2 years in the making. Bud's garage sale kicked off yesterday, and this actually started 2 years ago at his sale.
It's at 8134 Oakmere Drive in Bloomington. It's transpiring right now.
It is, and he has lots of new stuff coming out each day, so definitely head over there. But 2 years ago at the sale, Bob Hagen, actually, one of your favorite people, Paul.
I called him last night. He was at on my way to Daryl Hall and John Oates, knowing he and his beautiful wife, Val, were going to see Train and Hall and Oates. So I was going to give him some intel on the set list. And he's at Bud Grant's. And I hear you talking in the background.
We were both there. It was just like a couple of years ago. Bob actually kind of started this whole thing because he let me know that there was a woman at Bud's sale who had come to meet him, and she had a letter that he had written to her in 1977. She had written a letter as a child. He received a letter and actually wrote back to her, and so she brought that letter in. We thought it was really interesting. Bob showed me a photo of it. I thought, okay, that's cool. Maybe we can do a little piece of content around this, a little story. So I actually went to Coach Grant's office a couple of weeks later. I sat down. I started asking him a couple of questions about this letter and about letters that he had received while he was coaching. And as I'm talking to him, he kind of stands up and turns around, and there's a file cabinet that was in his office at Winter Park. And he goes, well, I have lots of letters. And I said, oh, can I see them?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, should I ask? Should I not ask? So he opens the file drawer and just starts piling letters like on the desk in front of me.
One of them was from like Vince Lombardi saying, F you, nice win, see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah, didn't see that one, but there were some interesting ones. Just piling them up. And I'm kind of grabbing them and I'm looking through them, and I said, well, Coach, these are really interesting. And he was like, nobody cares about these. These are, you know, 30 years old. And I said, people might care about these. Yeah. These might be really interesting. Can I take them? And so he said, sure. So we put them all in a box, and I took them with me and basically started going through the process of reading each one. There were approximately 250.
A lot, mostly handwritten, right?
Mostly handwritten, some typed. They all had at least a hand, you know, written signature.
Yeah.
But a lot of handwritten ones, a lot of really interesting stories from fans. And then really, like, big names started popping out at me. I start sorting through, okay, well, this one's from Richard Nixon.
Wow.
So there's a letter from Richard Nixon to Coach Grant after he retired for the first time in 1984. And I'm looking at, like, is this the real thing? You know, we're looking at signature and his letterhead and stuff like that. There's a letter in there from Lamar Hunt. There's a letter in there from Richard Durrell, who was the first publisher of People magazine.
Right.
So I'm going through these saying, hey, there's something here. This is really interesting.
How old are you?
30.
What did you know about Bud into the project, and what do you greater appreciate now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I knew, you know, basics about Bud before I started working for the team, just things that I learned from my dad and other people who grew up more in his era. Then since working for the team, I've learned a lot more. I've learned, you know, the history, the impact that he made on the game and things like that. But through this project, what's been my favorite part is hearing the way that he truly impacted fans.
Yeah.
And it's crazy when you think about how long he was a coach for the Vikings, and that just doesn't seem to happen as much anymore, where a coach is with a team for that long.
Right.
And getting to hear some of these people's stories and how they viewed him has really been interesting for me, somebody who am not old enough to have seen him coach, so I just hear stories. But, you know, there was one woman who wrote in like a couple, I think it was a few weeks or maybe a couple months after her husband had passed away, and he was a huge Bud Grant fan, and she just wanted to like share that with Coach and what he meant to her and to her husband that had passed away. And so these types of like personal stories, getting to talk with these people and hear what Bud meant to them and really the impact that he had, has been incredible.
Off topic for a second, Miss Lindsay Young, Vikings.com in studio. How are we titling this? Letters to Bud or what?
Yeah, so it's Letters to Bud, and then there are kind of five chapters or five different groupings of content.
Very nice.
And so the first one is rolling out tomorrow on Vikings.com.
Excellent.
So it's notable names, national notoriety. And
excellent.
So the letter from Richard Nixon will be in there along with some other recognizable names for sure. So be sure to check that out.
Off topic for a hot tick. I need intel. Because Bud yearly joins 9 to noon the Friday of his garage sale.
Right.
Which is at 8134 Oakmere Drive in Bloomington. That will take place tomorrow with PA in charge at about 940. What are some items that are being sold there? Like what are when you walked around as the 30-year-old L, what are some things you see that appeal to all generations?
Yeah, there's a lot of... It's funny how he has things that kind of tie in his passion for outdoors and the Vikings. There are a lot of duck decoys that are painted Vikings purple with the horn on the side.
Very neat.
So those seem to be kind of popular. There are some paintings. There's some magazines I have Bud on the cover that he's autographed. Probably my favorite item this year is one where you can pull something out of a box for free, which does not happen at his sale.
Right.
But it is 30-plus years of every hotel soap and shampoo that he has stolen on road trips, dating back to his time with the Lakers.
It is a little, and I can't speak for what it was like in the 70s or 80s, it is a little-known fact that the shampoo, the lotion, the conditioner, even if there's a sneaky little shoe shine, that stuff in those rooms, it not only is it replaceable, but it's there for you to take. So, like, if you don't like your shampoo at home and you're at, like, a Westin or a JW Marriott in Chicago and this stuff smells good, by all means. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Now, tracking down original writers or family members,
yeah,
too. You said edition one or the first part of this, Letters to Bud, debuts at Vikings.com tomorrow.
Correct.
But to, you know, outside of Richard Nixon and Richard Durrell and Paul Brown and Lamar Hunt, to extend it, I imagine you would have to interview family members and, like, people who have written about him before and stuff like that.
Yeah, correct. So the family members and stuff that I interviewed were actually family members of people who wrote these letters. Mm-hmm. And so when I started going through these letters, I said, I really want to talk to these people.
Very nice.
The first interview that I did was actually with Archie Manning. He had written a letter. And that one, you know, I talked to Bob Hagen. I said, hey, I would love to get on the phone with Archie. And so we had this conversation, and he popped down one day and said, you know, I gave Archie your number. He probably will give you a call, so just keep an eye out for that. I said, okay, cool. I'll prepare for it. If you know me, you know that I'd like to be prepared. I like to have things written out. So I walked down to a coworker's office. I'm telling him, yeah, you know, I need to prep for this interview. All of a sudden, my phone starts ringing.
There he is.
And it has the New Orleans area code. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm doing this now.
Right.
So I did an interview with Archie Manning, and that kind of kicked things off.
Yeah. And you're like, Archie, Peyton or Eli, who's better and why?
Right, exactly. I just asked him all of those tough questions.
Right.
No, he had a ton of good stuff to say about Bud. And that just kind of got the ball rolling on tracking down some of these people. I actually ended up handwriting some letters myself and mailing them to addresses that I believed these original letter writers were living at, and saying, kind of telling them a little bit about who I was, the project. You know, I hope I'm finding Brandon, who wrote a letter to Bud in 1984, and he was 8 years old at the time. I'd love to talk to you.
Excellent.
Here's my card. I think I found maybe about five or six of these people by writing letters myself.
That's great.
Yeah.
Very well done. Lindsay Young, Vikings.com. What about this project impacting you? I mean, you're age 30, and you've done a lot at Vikings.com, and I've gotten to know you pretty extensively over the years, and really appreciate your work ethic and your care for the team and your work. But overall, this individual project, mm-hmm. working with Bud Grant, seeking out the writers, chatting with luminaries. How has that impacted you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been super, super rewarding for one thing, because this is by far the biggest project that I've ever worked on. And at times it was overwhelming. At times it was really exciting. At times it was discouraging because I'm trying to find people and I don't really know how to track them down.
Right.
So it definitely kind of pushed me outside of my comfort zone a little bit, which mm-hmm. was really good. It was a growing experience. And like I said a little bit earlier, I think just getting to know more about Bud and what he means to people and really understanding how special it is that you or I can talk to Bud or see him on a daily basis. Like, right. I think you sometimes have to step back and realize how big of a deal he is, right? Because yeah. he's sort of just around. But when you talk to these people who really are sort of celebrities, for lack of a better word, in their own right, and have this huge amount of respect for Coach Grant, mm-hmm. It really kind of grows that to another level of respect.
Last one. You are a woman working and writing in the NFL. What would you say to women who write, who aspire to a similar career?
Yeah, I would just say if you love it, keep doing it. I've had people ask me that question before. I've never felt, disrespected or anything like that because I'm a female. I love what I do. I think if you have a strong work ethic and you can show people that you know what you're talking about and that you can produce good work, then they're going to respect you the same as they would any other writer. So don't be deterred by the fact that you are a female in maybe a more male-dominated industry. That I just think that that would be, holding yourself back, and you owe yourself better.
In closing, letters to Bud, Vikings.com. What's the plan?
Yeah, so like I said, the first chapter will roll out tomorrow on Vikings.com. And then the additional four groupings, we're going to roll out one per week. Mm-hmm. So we're going to kind of work on the schedule a little bit with that, kind of, frame it around OTAs and stuff so that we can get that out and in front of readers. But one per week after tomorrow. So definitely keep an eye out. Would love to hear your feedback. Shoot me an email. Follow me on Twitter. And, let's talk about it.
What's your Twitter handle?
Lindsay with an EYMN Sports.
Great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindsay Young, Vikings.com. Letters to Bud, debuting tomorrow at Vikings.com. Nacho Lieber in studio next.
You're listening to PA.
Remember one thing. Football's entertainment. It's not life or death. There are more important things in life than football.
On the Fan.
Yeah. This album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from, that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And to all my peoples in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby.
Check it.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match.
You can enter to win a pair of tickets to see Solo, a Star Wars story. It's at the IMAX Theater at the Minnesota Zoo May 25th through the 27th. That's next weekend. KFAN.com, keyword contest for more info.
When I remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner. Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk Master Flex, Love Bug Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood.
It's all good. It's all good now.
And if you don't know, now you know.
Because he is Nacho Lieber. He's my Lieber. He's Ben Lieber. He's in studio each and every Thursday, 9 to noon. Catch him on the Power Trip, Mondays and Thursdays. Ben Lieber, former game-changing linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings. 10 years in the National Football League out of K-State. Here is Nacho Lieber to kick off the second hour of the presentation. And begin discussing the legalizing of sports betting. I caught you on the Power Trip this morning chatting about this, that, and the other. Being .15 on a golf cart.
Yeah.
Tommy Olsen giggling,
yep.
Laurel, Yanni. Yep. I mean, a lot of things came up that were cool. I don't know if they talked to you about sports betting. I'm because A, you're smart, and B, you are a former/pro athlete. Legalizing sports betting. What are your thoughts? Like when this whole thing went down, what did you immediately think?
I thought It's about damn time. I still don't really understand all the sports betting, all the lines and the numbers and the pluses and the minuses and the odds and all that stuff.
Right.
I'm just sort of getting more involved in that. I always shied away from it as a player because I didn't want any sort of like rumblings or rumors that, yep, oh, he's a sports bettor, even though you're legal to bet on sports in Vegas and, yep, do other sports, but I just didn't want there to be any cloudiness, right? I shied away from it.
But even as a guy who admittedly doesn't completely get, hey, so-and-so's minus 360 to win this series and the comeback is plus 280, like what all that means, would in locker rooms, correct me if I'm wrong here, but players look at point spreads. They don't look at point spreads to bet on the games. They look at point spreads to find the level of respect coming from somebody in like Las Vegas or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. They do that. And we actually had an internal, you know, college football betting pool that we did every Saturday or, you know, every weekend.
Yeah.
And that was just for fun. And that's really when I started the latter part of my career, when we started doing that, that's when I got more intrigued in, wow, sports betting is actually really fun. And to me, and I know that there's a gambling problem and addiction and there's psychological things with some people, but to me, it seemed very innocent. It seemed like a really fun way to stay engaged in something that maybe I wouldn't be engaged in previously.
Right.
We don't have a lot of time on Saturdays because sometimes we're traveling or you got family in town. So I didn't always tune into college games,
yeah,
but I enjoyed it. And it was like one of those things that was missing a part of my life, that I played college football. I loved college football. I still love college football. But when you're in the NFL, there's so many things happening that it just sort of went by the wayside. And I didn't like the fact that I was losing that. And the sports betting sort of brought me back into paying attention to what was going on in college football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take that a step further. I'm not a huge NBA fan.
Right.
I pay attention to hockey a little bit. I like baseball probably more than the other two sports. But all that being said, it's like fantasy sports. It brings you in the fold. It
right.
makes you interested. And there's now an emotional and a financial connection to these games.
Yeah.
I think
and the financial connection doesn't have to be life-changing.
No, it doesn't have to be.
I mean, it can be a Sunday night in July, wife has the kids all squared away, you're home, and it's like Rangers at Yankees, ESPN, betting is legal, I have an account, I'm going to read up on this thing for 10 minutes and put $50 on the underdog just so I have more interest in it when I watch it.
Exactly, and you could see this thing coming down the pipe for a long time. Vegas has done it, and everybody enjoys it. And let's be honest, March Madness and all the other big-time sporting events, everybody bets on sports. It was the most obvious illegal activity that happens in the United States.
Yeah.
Let's find a way, government-wise, that they can get a piece of the action, they can increase their revenues, and everybody can just freely do it now and feel okay about it, as opposed to feeling like you're sneaking behind the woodshed to do something illegal.
Yeah.
I like it. I hope that Minnesota, the state, and the legislator and the governments will get together sooner rather than later and get on top of this thing. And instead of just waiting around to see, well, what are the ramifications and let's wait till these other states do it. No, this is what everybody's been wanting to do. If anything, take baby steps. Allow the casinos that are operating now to open up sports books. And let's just say that the only way you can do sports betting in Minnesota is go to the casinos and actually go to the sports books and place bets. I don't necessarily think that you need to have a corner shop on every small city, and yeah, that's the gambling facility.
Like Denver pot dispensaries.
Right. It doesn't
need to be like that.
I don't think that we need to do it like that.
Yeah.
I think that we can do it a little smarter, a little slower, but still get the thing up and running. Because, listen, there's a guy sitting right here, I'm pointing to myself, that would love to go down to one of the casinos and hang out in the sports book or place some bets and not have to place bets in Vegas on the Vikings or on college football.
Or deposit money in some account in Antigua.
Yeah, exactly.
And then make a bet and happen to hit a 9-team parlay and scoop $8,000 and then try to get it and have somebody in Antigua be like, well, we're not paying you.
Right.
Okay, well, go ahead and try to move the ball in this thing. We're not paying you. I mean, I'm not saying that happens. I'm also not saying it doesn't, you know, and you're dealing with something offshore in the Caribbean, different rules. So I understand what you're saying. Now, should there be concerns if players and coaches legally bet on non-football sports?
I don't think there should be any restrictions on that at all.
Well, I believe there will be restrictions. I'm guessing. I just wonder if you think there would be concerns. So you got player or coach not betting on college or pro football.
No.
But it's during the season, and these players, you know better than anybody, you start getting paid mid-September when regular season begins. Not a lot to do with that schedule, so that bank balance really climbs. It's like now we have legalized sports betting, and you have player du jour betting $75,000 on the Memphis Grizzlies to cover against the New York Knicks.
Look, I know that this is not always public consumption, but this is not a secret either. The amount of illegal bets that happen in the locker room playing dice and Blu-ray
right.
on plane trips is astronomical.
Right.
I mean, there are not just mortgages being put down. There are full-on homes that can be bought with some of the money that these guys play in just their personalized card games and playing dice. That's if I'm a team, if I'm the Vikings, that's more of a concern for me than it is them going to some legal betting facility and saying, all right, I'm going to bet on Clemson football this weekend,
right.
or I'm going to bet on the Memphis Grizzlies in basketball in October. Then these guys going getting together in the locker room and or at someone's house on a Thursday night and losing $100,000 to another teammate who may or may not pay up.
Yeah.
And may or may not have some issues when that said player says, I want my damn money.
And now you got a problem in the locker room.
And now you got a problem in the locker room.
Potentially could lead to fights.
Or worse, right? I mean, some of these guys are, they can be bad dudes. And you mess with the wrong bad dude, and you've got six figures on a payment, and you're not paying up. You better watch out. I mean, it can get dangerous.
Now, this is a stretch. And I'm not going to put referees at the professional level in this conversation because of the cash they make. And honestly, I think with sports betting being legalized, I bet you some things change with the officials where they like make more money. Maybe it's more of a year-round deal, just more incentives to not even think about anything dumb. But at the collegiate level, specifically some of these under-the-radar games where these refs aren't making the type of money, they're not working as high-profile games, legalized sports betting and officiating at the collegiate level. Your thoughts?
So here's my, and maybe this is just me being naive. Hasn't that and shouldn't that have been a concern this whole time? Because we all know that betting happens. We talked about it earlier. We know that betting's been happening illegally for years, generations, right? And there has to be some sort of concern at the NCAA level that it's already happening. And what can you do about it? I don't think you can do anything about it. You just hope that you hire the right guys with the right integrity and the right character, that they're not going to get mixed up in betting on their own games or getting so involved in some sort of payback where then said bookie or said people come back and say, we need you to fix this game so you can make your money back and we can make our money back.
Yeah.
And make this thing whole. I feel like that should have been a concern this whole time.
Yeah.
You know, because there's illegal bookies all around the city. And with every game, there's millions and millions of dollars being made and lost on bets.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can regulate what the referees do and don't do.
I think one thing that's underrated in this part of the conversation is through the years, from what I understand, Las Vegas actually works in unison with college basketball, college football, and the pro sports entities. Where, for instance, if like big wagers on a Southern Methodist University game average week after week after week, year after year, $500 to $750. Say those are big bets. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, starting on a Tuesday, they're taking $10,000 and $15,000 wagers. Then it happens again on Thursday. Point spread moves. They keep coming in on a Friday. That's where the watchdog that is Las Vegas, from what I understand, gets involved with collegiate athletics and pro sports if it happens there. And they're like, you know, we feel we should let you know that this never happens.
Right.
And we've had the opportunity to take like $175,000 in bets on this obscure game. You might want to look into it.
Well, I think that if you can get to this point, I'm sure we can with technology and software, and whether or not people agree with this or not, because they're going to feel like Big Brother's watching again. But if you really want to take care of the integrity of the game, then every official, coach, and player, I guess you have to go all the way through everybody, if you go to an official betting facility, there has to be enough information that you can be tracked and monitored. So they can cross-reference whether active player Ben Lieber is placing a bet on the Vikings game.
Yeah.
You know, and they can actually trace that. And I'm sure they can do that with the officials as well.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Ben Lieber or Ed Hockley wouldn't be making the bet. The information would be Ben Lieber's a game changer. Guess what? Nobody knows this. He's not playing and four other players aren't playing. And then they start unloading, you know, with constituents or people associated with their covenant.
Wasn't it, it was that point shaving scandal at Arizona State. Was it Stephen Smith? What was the name of the guy?
I can't remember.
Early 90s.
I remember Dennis Lundy, when he ran for Northwestern, dropped a ball at Iowa right at the goal stripe. And you can Google this, and I'm going top of the head and read more on it. And he supposedly was mixed in to something. It wasn't even that much, man. I'm kidding. I ain't kidding you. It might have been $300 to like $1,000. But he like dropped a ball on the goal line, and then it was proven that he did it purposely. And, you know, I don't know if those tracking big wagers or whatever, you know, because he may profit $1,000 off of it, but somebody else may profit $10.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where the watchdogs need to come in.
Well, and suddenly if like, cause I look at it as a soccer fan. So international soccer, there have been massive max fixing scandals and things related to betting over the course of time. But like this Arizona State thing I bring up, Vegas started looking into it because suddenly it's like, wait a minute, $400,000 is being bet on a non-conference Pac-10 team in December. What's up with that? And then they go down the line and ultimately they're indicted. In soccer, if suddenly, you know, Minnesota United FC fans, wait a minute, obscure second-tier American sport, there's $300,000 on a home game where three guys are injured. What's up with that?
Like, and Vegas is the watchdog on that.
Correct, yeah.
Vegas is the one who then will come to the officials and they'll be like, hey, you know, I know you frown on gambling, but guess what? You might want to frown on your game because this is happening right now. Quick Google swipe. February 6, 1999. Former Northwestern running back Dennis Lundy reiterated he fumbled intentionally on the goal line during a Big Ten game to win a bet. In part because of the key turnover, Northwestern lost the game, the 1994 game, with Iowa by far more than the point spread. Lundy won $400 on his bet, and he pleaded guilty in a point-shaving case. $400! And here it is, 2018, and I'm able to search this and look, oh my God, Dennis Lundy, 10 years ago, what in the hell were you, or 20 years ago, what in the hell were you doing?
But I think that sort of criminal activity, if you're that type of person that you care enough about $400 over and above yourself, your integrity, and your teammates in the sport, then, you know, legalize or illegal, it's not going to stop you. I mean, you're just a bad dude.
Oddly enough, he went undrafted.
Nacho Lieber in studio, a former teammate of Ben Lieber's, is back with the Minnesota Vikings. We will discuss that and more after this.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword BANG to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply.
That's
BANG
to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
If you had a white glove and we were face to face right now, you would slap me. I would challenge you to a duel, and then I would carve you up like a Christmas ham.
On the Fan.
Nacho Lieber's favorite song, Bop.
Yeah, why this song?
1997, the year you graduated. I heard it on the power trip this morning. I mean, it's part of the iHeart bit. It's a brilliant idea. Incredibly popular. What's that website again, Nordo?
It is graduationplaylist.com. And all you do is you type in the year you graduated high school.
Yeah.
And you can pop it, and then it directs you to the app. And suddenly you're listening to this sweet playlist based on, in your case, it was 1984, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean.
But
I mean,
for Nacho Lieber, it's 1997. Oh, yeah. And this. Bop. Bop. Bop.
just turn it off.
It's 97. It's your year, man.
I can't entertain. I'm embarrassed.
You should be.
I'm embarrassed for my age right now.
Now, I will say this. When setting up the second segment and knowing that this was going to come up, I went to the Billboard 100 from 1997 for, like, biggest songs in 97. This is number 12. Thank God there was somebody who found 11 songs better than this. How this was not 99 is beyond me, but it sold a lot. And give it to them now. It's super special. Hanson, 97, Nacho Lieber.
I'm turning my headphones down.
Nice headphones they are, too, by the way.
You realize everybody that's listening around is cringing.
Nobody's
jamming to the song.
My phone just blew up. I ain't even going to look at it. I'm going to tell you right now. It is one of 9 to Noon's biggest fans.
Yep.
Allison Wabshaw.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Wabshaw's beautiful, classy, fellowship-laden wife, who loves Hanson so much that she and family members yearly, listen to this, they go to Jamaica for 5 days where it's like this super special private Hanson trip.
It's a Hanson retreat.
Hanson retreat. They play 5 shows on the beach.
Because nothing says Hanson like a Jamaican retreat.
Right.
A Rastafarian retreat.
Yeah. Come on now. You know you like it. It's your year. It's 97.
It's embarrassing. It's
why you gotta knock Allie like that?
It's embarrassing.
I mean, seriously. 5 days in Jamaica on the beach with Hanson. And you, like, get to talk with them and... And they, you know.
Well, of course. There's only like 20 people that bought tickets. You're going to have a lot of one-on-one time for a few days.
Elite. And like last time they went, it rained the entire time. So like shows were canceled and stuff. And no, you don't get to lay on a beach chair at Ocho Rios next to the bass player for Hanson. Oh my God. What a ruined trip.
Give me some jerk shrimp.
Oh yeah. Now, Fairness and 97 Act. And I don't have the Billboard 100 in front of me.
Yeah.
When I was looking through that thing, damn, man, there were some good songs in 97.
Like this?
What is it? I put one in at 11:15 called Barely Breathing by Duncan Sheik. It's a nice-ass song. I ain't kidding you.
No, this isn't it.
Nah, what you doing, man?
Yeah, what is this? I've heard the song before, but I don't know what it is.
Tub Thumping.
Yeah, that song sucks. That's a bar song.
Yeah, they're... Return of the Mac. Return of the Mac. Something called
Mark
Morrison.
I would jam Return of the Mac, yeah.
That was 97. Yeah. I mean, remember Jewel?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jewel used to live in her car in Alaska. Got a little snaggletooth terrorism, but I mean, she can totally sing and her yodeling skills are unbelievable. But Jewel was fantastic at that time.
You know, the snaggle, by the way, actually gives her personality.
Sexy as bleep.
I'm glad she's never fixed it.
Oh, Jewel's fantastic.
Spice Girls, Wannabe?
Yeah.
No, see? Yeah. That's the thing. Awful.
Sugar Ray Fly?
Awful.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I just want to fly.
Right.
Listen to that.
What was going on with music
in the
late 90s? Because
you tell me it was your. Last night I was at XL Energy Center watching a 72-year-old lead vocalist and a 70-year-old John Oates with Train opening for them. Funny, 18,000 people there, all on their feet going nuts.
Yeah.
So much so that Daryl Hall was like, I'm going to share this with Soul Stories at 11:35. Daryl Hall, before doing Rich Girl in the encore, quiet, you know, they come back out, gets a little quiet, and then he's like, I know you think I'm blowing smoke up your bleeps. I'm not. Thank you for the energy tonight. Of all the stops on our tour, this has absolutely been the best.
And you believe him.
And we thank you. Yeah, because I've seen him 31 times, and I've never seen him do that before. I mean, the crowd was lit last night, as the kids would say, from the New Jersey prep schools. The crowd was lit last night.
Dude, they're a great band.
Standing up the entire show, and they give you all the hits. So that's my generation. Your generation is freaking Bop with Hanson.
I know.
And Spice Girls.
And Space Jam, I Believe I Can Fly.
No, that's nice.
That's not bad.
No, that was 97?
Hell yeah, it was.
It's in the playlist.
Yeah, and Jewel had a song
that's
like
a terrible
Foolish
song
Games.
Too.
You're telling you
Foolish
loved
Games
this, though.
Was good.
You loved this, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's no not, diggity.
No diggity? Are you kidding me?
Black Street was okay. In the house?
Yeah. Right. Nordo and I don't know. We roll with the fatness. We don't know what the half is.
But it's still right 97 there. When it comes to hip-hop.
Fat people unite.
Was still in that in-between, like, what do they want to be? This is, like, poppy hip-hop. It's
no,
okay. Even if I heard this on the throwback station, I would still turn this.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I would.
No diggity?
Yeah, because, you know...
Your musical taste is horrible.
What about Men in Black by Will Smith?
No!
Same playlist.
Okay, hold on. What about this?
Just stop. You're making me feel awful.
I got you here.
That's
yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
That's your year, man.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I'd put the windows down to this.
I'd go to Jamaica for 5 days to hang out with Mark Morrison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, man, what's that white thing in your hand and, like, smoke's coming out of the end of it?
It's a J!
Right. Bunch? We're talking... Oh, I got
Bunt
you, Mark.
Cakes.
Yeah, watch this. Return to the Mac. 97, Nacho Libre. No, that's nice. Plus, Miami of Ohio football is good. This is the theme song. Return of the Mac, homeboy. Toledo this ass. You guys thought Chester Taylor was bad.
Oxford is lit right now.
The return of the Mac.
You see Frank Solich just jamming to the song?
This guy?
Yeah.
You can't. How can you not like that?
No, you got like this.
Yeah. I mean, you can be straw-munching, Kodiak-chewing country rube, and that right there is going to make you go boom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know.
What was that website again for the graduation year?
GraduationPlaylist.com with the iHeartRadio app.
GraduationPlaylist.com, iHeartRadio app, free, downloaded now. Nacho Lieber in studio, what up? Brian Robison has returned to the mix. Your thoughts?
I'm excited for him. You know, there was a little bit of confusion at the end of the year, I think by myself, and you and I talked about it a little bit. The way he talked about the end of the season and his career, the way he saw it,
right?
I didn't think that he was under contract because it was like, well...
No, he had a year left.
He had a year left, yeah. Right? But his attitude was sort of like, I don't know what's going on, right? Things are kind of up in the air. And I really sympathize with him because, you know, being later in his career, you know, we sort of talked privately just where his emotions were at. And just kind of where he was. And I was hoping that he would take some time off, really think about the decision he's going to make. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, professional sports, it's such a final thing. It's not like you're just quitting one job and then move on to another job in the same field and you get to do the same thing, but maybe in a different city.
Yeah.
You know, when you're done playing football, you'll never, ever put on the uniform and a helmet and the cleats ever again.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the one thing about football that is different than other sports, that there is no weekend rec leagues. Guys don't get together and just play football. You know, hockey players around here have their little beauty league, and they have little, you know, Paul Fletcher goes out and they go out and play, you know, old men leagues at night, you know, 10 o'clock at night, ice time, and they're reliving the glory days and just having fun on the ice. You don't do that in football. So, you know, the one little piece of advice, and I know that he heard this 1,000 times over, was you got to make sure that you're right, you're correct. You got to make sure that your feelings are correct because you'll never do this again. You'll never put that helmet on ever again. So take some time, go back, you know, with his beautiful wife, Jamie, and his family, and go back and talk about it. And I'm glad to see that he made the decision to come back and play again.
B-Rob needs to make the team. I mean, am I stretching it by saying that?
No, that's reality. That's reality. I mean, that's... And I think that's absolutely something that he's prepared for. And if I can put myself in his shoes, it's I went back to Texas, I refreshed, I did my fishing, I contemplated life, and doing that, I'm sure he's a very smart individual, very self-aware. He knows where he's at. Listen, he's the first one in the locker room at the end of the season 2 years ago when he said, listen, this is Daniil's spot. You know, I know the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. I see what they want to do with him. I know that my reps are going to get cut down. I know that he's going to be the starter. I just want to make my mark as a pass rushing specialist, you know, fit in where I can get in and be a member of this team and contribute. So he has the awareness. And I think he's just going to take it a step further. He knows where this team kind of sees him and they view him. They've asked him now to take another pay cut. So it's not going to be a big loss financially if they say, listen, we appreciate everything you've done for us, but we're just going to move in a younger direction.
Vikings 2018, new offensive coordinator, new quarterback. Should this be a major opportunity for Laquon Treadwell? And I'm not asking or proclaiming, even if it is a major opportunity. And like, say, Cousins and or DeFilippo, like, say, privately, they pulled him to the side saying, you were a first-round pick. We actually spent 3 hours together watching your Ole Miss tape, and we see some things that we can use. Are you in or are you out? I'm not even saying that's happened. But so I'm not saying Laquon is up to it no matter what has happened. But with a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback, shouldn't this be a brilliant opportunity for Laquon to bust out of his shell, recognize pride goes before the fall, and have some sneaky conversations with these guys, like, give me a chance. And if I blow the chance and it doesn't work, that's on me. But this is not Shermer. This is not Norv. God bless both of them, both extremely accomplished. This is new, and I want this chance.
So the way I see it is everybody on offense is in the same situation that Laquon is in. Everybody has a clean slate. Mm-hmm. You know, there are guys that are going to be starters. They're inked in as starters. They can really do no wrong in the offseason and into the preseason to really lose the trust of their coaches.
Yeah.
But for a guy like Laquon and a bunch of other guys, the majority of the guys, they're going to get a clean slate and a fresh eye on how DeFilippo sees them in their scheme. And so I think that he has an advantage there, because I think he's fallen out of favor with a lot of other people in his years here as far as being trustworthy on the field. And I think DeFilippo is going to give him a fair chance.
Quarterbacks and offensive coordinators, now they're all gone.
Right. Here's the one thing that I think is the catch. When I watch him on film and I watch him in games, he looks like a guy that has yet to play free of mind, free of emotion, to go out there and instinctively play football. He still looks like a guy that is thinking on the field to me. And I think he does it too much. And that prohibits him from being the athlete that we all think that he is.
Yeah.
So that's where I think that it's going to be a little bit of a problem for him, is that, yes, he's going to have a clean slate, but at the same time, he's going to have to learn a new offense. He's going to have to learn a chemistry and a timing with his new quarterback, and he's going to have to do it making no mistakes. And because he does have a lot of ground to make up with Spielman and still with Zimmer, even though they're going to have a fresh perspective with DeFilippo.
Great point.
So he's still on a short leash. And I still worry that, is he a guy that can process things quickly and play fast? And can he do it faster than Kendall Wright? Can he do it faster than some of these other guys that are waiting in the wings, that are chomping at the bit to get some playing time in a new system?
Yeah.
That remains to be seen. It didn't seem like he was the type of guy that in the last couple of years to be that type of guy. So maybe maturity and other things have kicked in this offseason where he can put himself over the top.
The best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gone with that 9 to noon show.
KFAN and Coors Light are partnering with Conservation Minnesota to preserve Minnesota's lakes. You can follow at Coors Light on Twitter. Use the hashtag #BeerSavesLakes and Coors Light's. They're going to donate $1 to Conservation Minnesota for every single post. So, more details, get to KFAN.com, keyword lakes.
I think Bop may be highly underappreciated, at least according to the narrow casting later. Maybe Lieber's right and the world's wrong. Maybe music from 1997. What was that website again? Graduation what?
Playlist.com.
Graduationplaylist.com. Down memory lane we go. I mean, Twitter, the narrow casting leader. Kayla Mueller, what up? Thanks for listening to 9 to noon. Paul, Ben, oh no, the Mbop bit made my day. Andrew Curry, Mbop, jammin', turn it up.
Yeah.
Ian Middleton, Snaggletooth Terrorism, LOL. Am I right? Does she get? She does have a snaggletooth, right?
She has some unique,
Beady. Jerry Anderson, at ConanFan719, I am jamming to Hanson. Liking me. That's it. That's not bad. Mbop. Highly underrated.
Indeed.
9 to noon. Highly overrated. Beat it.
News du Nord.
Brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. Poker, blackjack, table games all year round. Live racing, including the Preakness. Something we're going to talk about with our 1055 guests. That's this Saturday. So get to CanterburyPark.com for all event details.
Number one.
Come play.
I want to start with two Vikings-related notes. First of all, the Minnesota Vikings yesterday announced they'd start. They've signed defensive tackle David Perry, two-year starter for the Colts, 2015 and 16. Most recently, I think he was on the practice squad, played a game for the Saints a year ago.
Okay.
Avoided some jail time, was suspended for the NFL for four games in Scottsdale a year ago, charged with a felony after stealing a golf cart that was used as a street taxi, also charged with DUI and resisting arrest.
But
a year and change.
Have you been on Vikings Twitter?
We hope he's grown.
Like 41 minutes ago?
Yeah, that's part of my...
Okay.
Yeah.
I just saw... I mean, I knew it was coming, but saw it. I didn't know it was public knowledge.
Yep, so four sacks and eight tackles in his career sounds like a depth opportunity for him in the Minnesota Vikings. Fifth-round pick by the Colts in 2015 out of Stanford.
Well, it's a proven bit. I mean, yeah. I'm not unbelievably familiar with David Perry. I know the name. I don't know the game. It's a proven bit. It's along the lines of your guy Will Sutton and Dayton Jones from last year.
Right.
I mean, he's got to get out there, and he needs to prove that there's a spot for him on the team.
Got
to
beat somebody.
Right. And it's Limbaugh hungry, Sheldon Richardson, Jaleel Johnson. You got those guys. So there is an opening for David Perry, who would be a backup to the nose. So Jaleel Johnson, backup to the three technique. Perry, backup to the nose. Shamar Stephen was that guy last year. Well, we all know he balls in Seattle now.
Now, this David Perry cat, maybe he'll have an opportunity in August to prove himself against the Jacksonville Jaguars line. The Jacksonville Jaguars coming to Minnesota in front of their preseason game in August.
That's the bomb.
To do joint practices at TCL.
Oh, my gosh. Above average.
This release I pulled from my email just less than an hour ago.
Well, you know the heat index is going to be 115, and you're going to sweat through all layers of clothing.
Nah, we don't get as humid as Cincy up here.
That's the boy. That Cincinnati humidity.
That's incredible.
That ain't no joke.
No.
And I grew up in Washington, D.C. The humidity was nasty, but the pollen or whatever led to hay fever. I had hay fever so badly at ages 11, 12, and 13, that before I went to school, my mom would used to have, she would have to boil water and then put my face over the steam so the steam would open my eyes.
Really?
Because they were sealed shut from the hay fever bit. I ain't kidding you, man. It was bad.
That's awful. Well, hopefully that doesn't take place. Wednesday the 15th and Thursday the 16th at Twin Cities Orthopedic Center in Eagan.
Yeah.
Jacksonville Jaguars joining the Minnesota Vikings in joint practices. Of course, they'll play at U.S. Bank Stadium on Saturday, August 17th in the second preseason game.
Feels like Xavier picking off Blake Bortles four times in one practice.
So more dates for training camp coming out, of course, but we do already know the rookies report Tuesday, July 24th, vets on Friday, July 27th. Those joint practices make it kind of a cool thing. We experienced it in Cincy. Now we're hosting with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Public will get the opportunity to see, you know, Miles Jack and Calais Campbell. They'll get to see Blake Bortles.
Leonard Fournette
with a full head of steam. They are very cool. I love joint practices. This is the first time the Vikes have hosted one, however, since 2007,
right,
when the Chiefs were down in my hometown, Mankato.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a fair amount of them. And, you know, back when Bursich was an assistant coach, he could probably share the story more accurately than me. It's a skull story is what it is. There was nearly the worst fight between football players I've ever seen in my life in Mankato when former Vikings hothead tight end Hunter Goodwin and former Kansas City Chiefs fullback Tony Richardson somehow, but like there was a joint practice fracas, but then Richardson and Goodwin, I mean, it almost was UFC terrorism on that middle field at Mankato. So it gets heated. Like last year.
Didn't he later play for the Vikings, Richardson?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Pac-Man Jones, how'd that joint practice work out for you a couple of years ago?
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Trash talk Adam Thielen, basically saying, who's this? Put a better receiver opposite than me. Jammed him up in his face so badly that his helmet actually cut open his face. And then Adam Thielen puts double moves on him all practice. And now Pac-Man can't get a job, and Thielen's going to the Pro Bowl. What up?
Look forward to that. Jags and Vikings at TCL.
Number two.
Let's start. Let's get the L out of the way. Good work, Lance Lynn.
Fowler, base hit into center. He needed it. So did the Cardinals. A two-out base hit, 2-0, St. Louis. Thank you, Dexter Fowler.
Sorry I can't get you paid off with Papa John's today, but after any Twins victory the next day, you get half off large and extra large pizzas with the code TWINSWIN at PapaJohns.com, which is sweet. They're off today. They're hosting the Milwaukee Brewers over the weekend, so maybe some wins and some pizza in your future. You heard that highlight courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest. That made it 2-0. Twins immediately on the grind. Logan Morrison, though, in the sixth, cuts it to 4-3 with a home run.
Whoa.
St. Louis stretches it to 6-3 in the very next half inning. That was it, 7-5 the final. Only three runs attributed to Lance Lynn, but he takes the L. He's 1-4 as a member of the Twins. You asked about Phil Hughes. Well, he gave up a home run on the 14 pitches of the inning of work he got yesterday, so he had a tough outing as well.
So what's that mean?
Well, it means in one of the limited opportunities that Phil Hughes has had to take the mound, he got blasted, and he was quickly removed after one inning of work. That's
right.
What that means.
Right.
Moving on, 18-21, chilling today again. Brewers over the weekend, another competitive team. Guardian Company next week, the Minnesota Twins, PA.
The interesting thing with Lance Lynn took place on the power trip today, where Mark Rosen chatted with a St. Louis Cardinals broadcaster yesterday, and said broadcaster intimated Lance Lynn physically does not look like the same guy we remember in St. Louis from last year. Kind of insinuating he might be out of shape because of either no or short training camp he was late to report. Bottom line, courtesy of Aaron Gleeman's Twitter, last year, Lance Lynn threw 8 starts, walked 9% of batters faced. This year at 16, threw 8 starts. His the player's batting averages on balls in play, 220. It's 394 this year.
Yeah, he's not doing well.
So why I guess have the audacity to insinuate Phil Hughes potentially could be a spot start for Lance Lynn, and it may be a stretch while we wait for Big Herb to come back. It's the long play. I mean, something eventually needs to change here, or you just have to be willing to wait through the L's. And if indeed body shape or stamina or lack thereof, or being in or out of shape, if that's the situation, I don't know how you fix it. I guess you just wait it out.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for the Minnesota Twins.
Number three.
I know, right? 35 seconds into the game, Vegas has the lead.
Underhand disc, quarter.
Wrong highlight.
As the puck comes out towards center, flipped in, and now the Knights come the other way. It's a pass toward Marchessault. He gets to the puck, walks in front. He scores! Jonathan Marchessault, another backhander, and the Knights lead 1-0. 35 seconds into game three.
That courtesy 98.9 KRLV. Scheifele ties it up in the second for the Jets. Vegas strikes back with another two quick ones, including one from Alex Tuch, his fifth of the playoffs. My favorite moment of the game, we'll get to this quickly before our Sport Clips clip of the week. This is my favorite moment.
Jets can't keep the zone. It's down the ice with 7 seconds. There's no icing. The clock at 5 seconds. Cut behind. Left score. There's the goal. 2 seconds left. And the Knights lead it 4-2.
So if sports betting eventually becomes in vogue here in the state of Minnesota, you're sitting watching this game last night. It's a 3-2 game. The over-under is 5.5. So the total number of goals is at 5. I think Vegas is a goal and a half favorite in the game. So if you took plus 1.5 on the other end of things, you're feeling good about yourself. With 2 seconds left, Marchessault just has to win that puck battle in the corner and skate away with the thing. And then with 2.7 seconds left, he hits the over at 6 with the 4-2 score, hits the goal and a half advantage for the win as the favorite, and with 2.7 seconds left, if there was a sports book here in Minneapolis, there would be those that would be cheering, there would be those with a tear in said beer. Those are some of the things that you have to look forward to with sports betting here in our state.
Two words, bad beats.
Number four.
And finally, our sport clips of the day. We'll do this courtesy of Robert Parrish. What a few titles with the Boston Celtics, commenting on head coach of the Celtics, Brad Stevens.
I think he get a little too much praise, but I like what he's doing. They giving him all the love like he done won three or four championships. Hey, come on now. Win something first. All the love he getting. Now, granted, don't get me wrong. He's a solid coach. I give him that.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
the love that he's getting from the media. You think the Celtics don't won two or three championships?
Robert Parrish, the Chief, centenary's finest. I'm going to disagree with him because I think all of the praise heaped on Brad Stevens is extremely well-deserved and justified at this moment, given the things through which he's been with injuries. And, I mean, Robert Parrish knows more about basketball than I'll ever know. But the way Brad exposes defensive mismatches is extremely satisfying for those who watch the game for situations like that. So, I mean, I don't know when enough credit is too much credit, but I think whatever comes the way of Brad Stevens definitely is worthy, is praiseworthy.
That's the Sport Clips Clip of the Week, PA.
Courtesy of Sport Clips, you can make an appointment via online check-in to get the MVP treatment. It is sportclips.com. Horses and hockey with my guys when 9 to noon continues.
Listening to PA.
You're going
to
therapeutically analyze me?
Yeah.
Well, you better pack a freaking lunch because I'm a mess on many levels, but go ahead.
On the Fan.
Nine to noon giveaway time. Pair of tickets. Twin Cities Burger Battle. It's this weekend at Harriet Island. All-inclusive ticket, which means unlimited beer and burgers from all participating local restaurants and breweries. Guests will also enjoy live local music and cast their vote to crown the Twin Cities Burger Battle champion. I got a pair of tickets right now. Caller number 9-651-989-5326. 800-320-5326. Burger Battle tickets.
And they're into the stretch. And it's just Defiant Mike Smith turning for home in front. Good Magic and Jose Ortiz a length behind as they come into the final furlong. Bravazo's down the center of the track. And then Audible on the inside who's now up in a third. Justify a two-length lead as they come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome! Justify has won the Kentucky Derby! It was very close for a second. Audible may have got there inside of Good Magic. Then it's still Regard in a final time of 2 minutes 4.20 seconds. He's still undefeated.
You tried everything. Larry Colmus, voice of the Triple Crown from NBC. You will hear Larry either on the Fan and or NBC Saturday, somewhere between 5 and 5:30. Calling Preakness 2018, where Justify looks to win the second jewel of the Triple Crown. On that and the world of hockey, we welcome in studio my guys in the desert. Kevin Gorg from Fox Sports North, Brian Aragone, the in-paddock analyst for Canterbury. They were here a couple of weeks ago, and during that time, BA told us 2 weeks ago today, Justify would win the Kentucky Derby. What do you do for an encore in the Preakness, and good morning?
The same thing I did on Derby Day. Justifies, it's a one-horse race, I really believe. In a few weeks at Belmont, they will be going for a Triple Crown. It's supposed to be muddy in Baltimore. Justifies strictly the one to beat. There's even less speed in this race. I think he goes right to the lead, never looks back. He's a colt amongst geldings in this race.
Yeah, it's hard to not like him. And, you know, you got $7.80 for your $2 win ticket on Derby Day because of that 20-horse field. You're never going to see $7.80 on this horse again. It was a great call. It was a bold call by you because at that point, he had not been battle tested. Well, he's battle tested now. He really, I thought, was running the tough part of the track. He was chasing a front runner that was setting sprint like fractions, and he's supposed to back up, and he didn't. And when Good Magic, who ran a really good Derby, came to him in mid stretch, it looked like Good Magic likely could go around him, and he said no way. He kept on going. He's a super horse. He's 1-2 on Saturday, so you're not going to make any money betting him to win, but if you believe Good Magic ran that winning race on Derby Day, and Good Magic isn't in that rarefied air that Justify is, that exacta and that trifecta with Justify over Good Magic is going to be so overdramatically played. If you can find some of the other strangers in this race to finish second, it is still a very interesting race to bet and make money. Just conceding it to Justify, there is still money to be made on Saturday.
Well, and take a look at on Derby Day. Justify was a heavily bet favorite in the Kentucky Derby. That pick four and pick five, over $60,000. You can do that again on Preakness Day, singling Justify, go deep, try and get some long shots like Funny Duck, who keyed those big payouts on Derby Day, and that's how you do it. But I think Good Magic's going to chase Justify all the way around the track, maybe tire late, maybe a Sporting Chance or someone else comes closing into it. But the two horses that really caught my eye going into the Belmont coming up are Audible and My Boy Jack. Those were the two horses that were threatening down the lane. They were closing ground late. Everyone else was kind of running in place. I don't think anyone else had the opportunity to catch Justify. Good Magic certainly wasn't getting there, but Audible and My Boy Jack are the two that I was worried about, and they don't show up in the Preakness.
Yeah, keep an eye on Todd Pletcher for the Belmont, because he's made it public for years, being a New York guy and a New York trainer, where most of his clients, and I mean million-dollar clients, are housed, that the Derby is cool, and he loves to have his horses peak at the end of spring and be ready to run on the first Saturday in May. But the number one race for them is the Belmont. So all four of Todd Pletcher's horses who ran in the Derby are now being pointed to the Belmont. And Audible, to your point, on a racetrack that was very kind to horses outside and horses on or near the lead, closed up the inside and ran a really good race. Lost second by a head bob. And so Audible's a horse that certainly, come Belmont time, is going to be a major factor. I think the Preakness is a free space in the bingo card for Justify. But if he wants to win the Triple Crown, I think the Belmont will be much, much different. A bigger field, much more talent, and then it's his third race in 5 weeks. And the one thing we do not know about Justify is he's been campaigned very lightly. Late to the track, didn't debut till February, and then lots of space in between races. I think this two-week gap won't be a problem because it's Bob Baffert, and when Baffert's horses fire in Kentucky and they go to Baltimore, they just win. Look at his numbers. It's through the roof. Belmont might be a different animal. If you're going to beat him, it's not going to be Saturday. It'll be Belmont 3 weeks from Saturday.
Back to BA's Derby prediction. You know, in our ever cynical game where it's good-natured and we'll all poke fun at each other, but like Brian picked the favorite to win a race and the horse won. So, like, you know, normally in normal races, non-derby type races, it'd be like, okay, Einstein, how'd you come up with that? The horse was favored. Where I said this to him when we were doing Today at the Races last week at Canterbury, the pre-race show we do. You know, it's let's never downplay picking the winner in the Kentucky Derby.
20 horses.
And well, by the way, that horse was 3-1 with 8 minutes to post. It went off at 5-2. When there's $170 million worldwide bet on a race, that is such a major move with major late money coming in on that horse. I don't care if the horse is 2-1 or 20-1. And I meant what I say then and I mean it now. To pick the winner of the Kentucky Derby is prognosticating excellence. And I don't care if it's a favorite or not.
Yeah, it ain't
that easy, man.
Do it for a living. I started back in 1986. I've had three Derby winners,
it's
an impossible race to handicap. And one of mine was a 3-1 shot named Winning Colors. She kind of hooked me back in 1988 as the second choice. But to back to Brian, I mean, public handicappers weren't picking him because of that factor, because he was the favorite. And the fact that you got $7.80 on a horse that might win the Triple Crown, let's look back on this in a few weeks and see how good that $7.80 looks.
And trusting Bob Baffert, I actually think he sat on this horse knowing how good this horse potentially could be. Didn't need to get that 2-year-old foundation. In hearing and listening to him talk in those interviews, he was incredibly high on this horse. It came out publicly after the race that he had even told a friend. He had a really good one. He made a $500 bet before the horse had even broke the maiden. Whoa. In Las Vegas on ESPN, got $150,000 back on his $500 bet because he got 300-1 before Justify had even made his start at the racetrack.
So wait, Baffert knew that person?
Baffert knew the person, told him to bet on it.
Yeah,
this was a good deal.
KG, I was going to share this with you. Vegas Stats and Information Network, I've turned you on to it.
Love it.
I have two guests tomorrow from VSiN. One is a guy with whom I used to work at the Pasadena Star News in the late 80s, early 90s, Ron Flatter. He handicapped the Derby for PA in charge a couple of weeks ago. Another is a cat named Paulie Howard, who I think used to intern at The Fan, and he now does a show called Follow the Money. So that's all going to be tomorrow. But I heard this, Vegas Stats and Information Network, off what BA said. Before Justified debuted, like the week to 2 weeks before, there is somebody who obviously knows Bob Baffert, and they obviously knew this horse had talent. He went to Las Vegas, knows a sportsbook manager for something called CG Technologies. And he was like, I'm looking at your future numbers on these Derby horses, and I'd like to make a bet on somebody off the board. So because the guy knew him and he wanted to take the action, he's like, well, who's the horse? His name is Justified. All right, I'll give you 150-1. And the guy's like, are you kidding me? The horse has never run. He goes, all right, 300-1, and that's the most I'm doing. Guy put 500 on Justify at 300-1.
Unbelievable.
Scooped 150 large in your face, Milwaukee.
Before he had even debuted.
Yeah, go ahead and legalize gambling.
Do you know the odds of even getting that horse into the gate in the Kentucky Derby? It's an amazing play.
Yeah.
300-1 is probably an underlay, and now you look back and it's, guy should have had a ski mask on. I mean, there's another story floating around that someone in Baffert's camp, after the maiden-breaking win, there was a lot of buzz about this horse. Now the people would say, oh, hey, look at this guy. Goes to Vegas, same type of story, wants odds on Justify to win the Triple Crown. There was a lot of bantering back and forth. They finally settle on 11-1, which is
11-1
horrific odds. The house is loving these odds. Guy puts $100,000 down. It's a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
Baffert's told the story as well. The guy's got $100,000 to make $1.1 million if Justify can win the Triple Crown. And right now, the odds aren't 11-1 anymore in Vegas.
But if you have $100,000 to wager, you probably don't need that $1.1 million anyway.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but it's about beating some. I mean, at that stage of competition and business,
you're trying to beat them.
Yeah, you want to beat somebody. It's competition.
It's like us on Saturday, man. We're still going to try to beat this race. Yeah. I don't care if he's 1-2. We're still going to make money on Saturday betting the Preakness. I've got a plan in place. We all do it when you open up the past performances.
Well, hold on. So you're telling me this 11-1, $100,000 wager.
It's real.
The trainer of Justify, Bob Baffert, knows about it.
Yeah, he touted the guy and said, this horse is, the guy's, is in the group that's around Bob Baffert.
Hear me when I tell you this. So say us three, BA's Bad Mistake Stables, with KG and yours truly, we all three own a Son of Conquistador Cielo who's bred all day to go a mile and a half. And he's a three-year-old, and I want him to run in the Belmont, and he can win. And Bob Baffert trains him. So does that mean Baffert's going to keep his good three-year-olds away? Not only so A, Justify can win, but B, this guy can cash his wager?
Well, Bob Baffert's got a pretty good horse that was talked about as being his best horse for the Derby. We haven't seen him lately, have we?
And
McKenzie?
McKenzie was Bob Baffert's best horse going into January.
But he did keep them apart. They went to separate races.
And now he's not racing suspiciously.
Well, he did get a little bit injured when he beat your horse, Bolt D'Oro, but got taken down.
I'm telling you right now. If Bob Baffert didn't have Justify, I guarantee you McKenzie be running at some point inside this Triple Crown. They don't want to bet against themselves, and I can't blame them.
Now, hold on. So Justify, let's say in the Preakness, Saturday, watch and wager on it at Canterbury. I believe our gates open at 8 a.m. We race tomorrow night, 6:30. You can advance wager on the Preakness, the entire Pimlico card tomorrow. At Canterbury, you want to come out and see BA and I. We'll be doing a free handicapping show on the Canterbury races at about 5:55 or 6 p.m. adjacent to the paddock. CanterburyPark.com for information. So if Justify is 1-2, KG puts up $20 to win, and after Justify wins, you scoop 30. So 20 to win 10. If it is as easy as you guys are making it sound, why do we not put up $2,000 to win on him? To win $1,000. Why don't we do that? I mean, you said free spot on the bingo card.
Well, I think he's going to win.
I want free there's money no in
doubt,
my pocket.
There's no doubt in my mind that this is a much easier scenario for victory. There's no speed in the race. He has the front, if he wants it, to himself. Mm-hmm. He's 2-for-2 on a wet track, and it's a monsoon in Baltimore right now. It's 2.5 inches of rain in the last 2 days. They're getting 2.5 more inches of rain before... What? The race goes off Saturday night.
Why don't we get that here? I'm out there eyeballing my Wigelias waiting for rain, and Baltimore's getting all the rain.
They got all the rain. He's got all the mud, and he might not even be 1-2. Wow. I'm not a big... I don't want to bet $2,000.
What do you got against money? You said he can't lose. If he can't lose, It should be 1-9.
If I had your bankroll, I'd put the 2,000 down that. In a blink. Yeah, all right,
me in 3 years. Brian Aragone, the in paddock analyst at Canterbury. Kevin Gorg, Fox Sports North, in studio. So on the Preakness Saturday, how do you bet it? If indeed there is a prohibitive favorite who most likely will win, we will get into that. We will give you some horses to consider tomorrow night at Canterbury Park and mix in Stanley Cup playoffs, 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA.
I think a good lesson to be learned from this is control your emotions immediately after the game and go back and look at the tape, okay, before you jump to conclusion.
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by Prism Research. And do this tomorrow. Hang out with me. I'm headed to the grand opening of Overton's in Rogers, Minnesota. It's up in Rogers, just right up there off 94. Grand opening of Overton's in Rogers tomorrow from noon to 2. It's a big spot grand opening weekend. You know, marine, water sports, outdoors, they're the king of it. So get there. You can register in store. There are thousands of dollars in prizes. Even a brand new 2018 fishing boat that they're giving away this weekend for the grand opening. So come hang out with me noon to 2 tomorrow at Overton's in Rogers.
BAKGKGBA at FSN Gorg via Twitter for KG. Mr. B, what's your Twitter handle? At
Mr. B underscore CBY analyst.
At Mr. B underscore CBY analyst. Brian Aragonian, paddock analyst. Let's close the Preakness. From a betting standpoint, if you do not want to put 200 to win on Justify to win 100 or maybe even less, but you recognize Justify probably is going to win this race and you still want to find a way to spot up and make some cash, KG, let's begin with you. What would be your modus operandi?
I'm going to do a straight exacta play, conceding the race to the favorite, and Justify 1-2 we think is going to win. And then I'm going to try to get around Good Magic, who's the logical second choice. That exacta is going to be probably a $4 equation for a $2 bet. I don't want that exacta.
Yeah.
The horse I'm keen in on is the two-horse Lone Sailor.
Oh, my gosh.
He's 15-1. Broke his maiden in the slop at Saratoga by 11.
Oh, yeah.
Derby day, I went back and watched the replay a handful of times. Did not like the trip that James Graham gave this horse. On a day where the outside part of the track was gold,
yeah,
he was stuck inside.
Yep.
Got stopped
he got
and stymied.
Slowly, 2.5 inches of rain, and he's on the inside.
Bad part of the track. So my take is this. Quip has speed. Good Magic has speed. Justify certainly has speed. They're going to get burned out trying to chase that favorite. Lone Sailor is that deep closer that's going to save ground, make a big run late, loves the slop. And so I'm going to key that as my exact. I'm going to do a $20 straight exacta. That should pay around 10-1. So if I can get to come in Justify over Lone Sailor, boom, there's $200. Now, in the trifecta, I'm going to do $2 trifectas, keying the 7, Justify on top, using the 1 Quip, the 2 Lone Sailor, the 3 Sporting Chance, and the 8 Bravazo in second. Then I'll put Good Magic and all those horses in third, hoping that the second favorite runs up the street and we can get some long shots in there in second and third for the trifecta, Brian.
B.A., what you got?
Yeah, I'm going to try and be alive in my pick 4, pick 5 to Justify. Hopefully we can get a long shot in there and get those pick 4s and pick 5s to pay, just like they did Derby Day when Justify won. But if I'm going to play an exacta straight up, I'm probably going to try Sporting Chance along with KG's top pick, or one of them, in Lone Sailor. I think those two deserve a long look. I actually think Good Magic, who's going to be prohibitively the second choice, is more likely to run off the board than to beat Justify. Good Magic absolutely needed to be keyed up to win the Bluegrass in order to get into the Derby,
yep,
and then a very difficult taxing race in the Derby. I think that is a vulnerable second choice, and you could get those long shots underneath. So I'll put Justify on top with Sporting Chance and Lone Sailor underneath.
Do we give Bravazo any chance to finish second? And what are his odds?
His odds are going to be around 20-1.
Yeah.
Ran a really good race on Derby Day. Probably ran the better race compared to the horses we're talking about on, yeah, Derby Day.
Boy, Lone Sailor smoked him in the Louisiana Derby.
I think Lone Sailor is the better horse, and you got a tough post out there where he'll have to circle the wagons. Certainly can pick up the pieces for second and third. It's Lucas, and Lucas seems to always have his horses fit and ready for the grind that is the Triple Crown.
Mm-hmm.
No, all bets are off after the Triple Crown because his horses get a little worn out. So I will use him, but I really like Lone Sailor a lot in that second and third slot.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get some long shots coming from behind. I think those horses are going to be trying to be pressing the pace. They're just going to tire late because those horses like Lone Sailor, Sporting Chance, have the ability to come from out of it. Bravazo, Quip, and Diamond King, who are going to try and keep pressure on Justify, they're not going to be anywhere to be found at the wire.
Yeah, Good Magic has to try something different. He sat off the pace, got the perfect trip in the Derby, came to get the money, and couldn't get by Justify. So if I'm Chad Brown, I'm talking to my jockey. Yeah. You've got to take the race to Justify earlier. So I see Good Magic making that premature move around the far turn, trying to hook Justify, put some pressure on him. And when Justify, if he puts Good Magic away, now our long shots have the better run of the race, and now we can get paid even with a 1-2 shot on top.
Racing at Canterbury tomorrow night, 6:30, week 3 of our 70-day season. Each of you, for those interested in coming to Canterbury for some Friday night racing where the weather looks like it'll be spectacular, BAU first. If somebody wants to spot up on a win bet, doesn't really matter to me what the price is. I would just like to see the horse get to the winner's circle so members of this listening audience can make some money and cash some tickets. What do you think?
Won't have to wait long for me. First race tomorrow night, Friday. Elvin's Touch, Orlando Mojica, Robertino Diodoro. Guy's had 18 starts here at Canterbury so far. He's won on 39% of them. Broke the maiden last time out on a wet track at Oaklawn, taking them basically from gate to wire. Does have a little bit of a tendency to start slow. Takes on winners for the first time, but it's technically a drop in class going from the maiden ranks of 16,000 down to 5,000. I'm all about Elvin's Touch. I'm going to key it in that early pick four, and I'm going to make a win bet as well if I can get that 9-5.
I like your steam there. I've got him on top myself. Diodoro's off to a predictably solid start at the meet. I'm going to go to race number five, guys. Race four goes around 8 o'clock tomorrow night at Canterbury. The heavy favorite's going to be the four, Sword of David. Canterbury fans bet Mac Robertson no matter what he puts in the gate. And Sword of David comes in from glitzy Oaklawn Park. He's going to get all the money. He's going to be around 6-5. I'm going to try to beat him with the five horse. The second choice looks like Lone Speed. Number five is awesome, Emmett. Francisco Bravo trains Will Rogers shipper. You're not going to get a lot of people jumping on the Will Rogers bandwagon, but what I like about this five-year-old is last time out, off at odds of 7-2, wide the whole way, and the comment in the racing form, as rider pleased, which means he destroyed the field. Solid group of $15,000 claimers, similar group here, controlling speed, and around 3-1. In race four tomorrow night, I'll take the five. Awesome, Emmett.
Now, each time you come to Canterbury, be it parking valet or coming in the main entrance by the gift shop or the information center, Kevin's staff sells a tip sheet. It is a green sheet called KG's Power Plays. Pick those up each and every time you come. Hopefully it helps you find financial freedom. With Brian Aragone and Kevin Gorg in studio, it's about horsies, but it's also about hockey.
As the puck comes out towards center, flipped in, and now the Knights come the other way. It's a pass toward Marchessault. He gets to the puck, works in front, he scores! Jonathan Marchessault, another backhander, and the Knights lead 1-0, 35 seconds into game three.
98.9 KRLV.
Vegas beat Winnipeg. Big spot game tomorrow night. What do you guys think?
I think the team that wins tomorrow night likely wins the series. I thought before this series started, it'd be a seven-game grinder. I haven't changed my opinion. Evenly matched teams, different styles of play. And Brian and I were just talking in the commercial break. Winnipeg, to me, is the better team that hasn't yet found their game and played a consistent 60 minutes. When they're on their game, they attack with speed and physicality. They did that in the third period, and they took the game to Vegas. They got the early goal. They dominated, and Fleury had all the answers like a cup-winning goalie should. To me, it's all about Winnipeg. If they can put 60 minutes together tomorrow night, they're the better team. They win that game. They win the series. If Vegas, who goes out there and gives you the same effort every night, honest effort, smart hockey, well-coached, with speed and skill, they'll beat you because they wait for you to make your mistakes, and Winnipeg has taken the bait in this series time and time again. So right now, you have to shade Vegas a little bit because they've got the lead in the series, Brian. But you know at some point, if Winnipeg can get out there and play the way they're capable of playing, I still believe they're the better club.
I mean, this Vegas team just continues to roll. They're consistent, like you talked about. And last night, Winnipeg wasn't consistent. They didn't play a 60-minute game. And when you're in the conference finals, you can't expect to go in on the road and win a game when you don't play 60 minutes. They played about 25 to 30 minutes yesterday. They were absolutely dominant with 18 shots in the third period. But the difference for me, even though Winnipeg wasn't on their game, Marc-Andre Fleury. The difference between Marc-Andre Fleury and Hellebuyck, was crucial yesterday. Hellenbuck, he gave up that goal. I know it was a breakaway, 35 seconds, but he might as well sent a post letter letting him know that he was going to poke check on that breakaway. He started making the move at about the blue line, and then when they worked hard to tie the game on the road, they give up a fluky goal where he goes behind the net, turns it over to Howla. Howla puts it right out front, and they tap it into a wide-open net. That was the difference for me. But if Winnipeg can win tomorrow, I think they're still the better team. Another question is, where'd this physicality go? They pushed around the Minnesota Wild. They pushed around the Nashville Predators. And Las Vegas is not a bigger team than either of those two, and they seem to be hanging in tough with Winnipeg.
To that point, I haven't seen Bufflin smack one guy like he did Koivu the entire series.
Did you see him take two guys by the back yesterday and just pull them out of the pile?
In the scrum, I've seen some of that physicality we talked about, but I haven't seen the open ice hit that Bufflin has early in a game to set the message that, okay, you come in our zone, you better have your head up, you better look out because we got a big buff back here that's going to end your night. And I haven't seen that aggressive forecheck until the third period last night. At any point in this series, it's like Winnipeg has fallen into the trap of just playing the type of game that suits both teams, which is a speed game. And Vegas can play that game. I'm not certain that Vegas can trade physical play with Winnipeg. I'm not certain that anybody outside of Nashville can trade physical play with these Jets. And yet they've allowed this to be an up-tempo series that plays right into the Golden Knights style. And because of it, they're down 2-1 in the series.
Well, and look at the difference. Vegas, Howla, Tuck, James Neal, Marchand, they're all producing. Winnipeg, you have Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. They have become one-dimensional this series. They're relying on one line. Scheifele's got 14 goals, 11 goals on the road. He's already has more goals this year than anyone did in all of the playoffs last year. But my worry is they turned a little bit into the Pittsburgh Penguins where they rely on only one line.
Tampa wins tonight, right?
I wouldn't say that, no. Okay. I would say Washington wins tonight. I picked them to win the series.
Wes Walls.
Wes Walls was brilliant with his take the other night with both those road wins.
He's an elite hockey mind.
I hope somebody was out there scooping chips out in Vegas because Walls was spot on.
If sports betting had been legalized in Minnesota when Wes
that
Walls
right up.
Was on my radio show Monday, then they would have had to have a freaking wheelbarrow to deliver the money to Wesley and yours truly.
He's coming off the Webb Simpson play at the Players. I mean, Wes right now should be on an airplane. He should be in Vegas for the game tomorrow night. The guy can't miss right now. Rich, get richer.
He and Janet Gretzky playing a pick five at Preakness Day. Be great.
I think Washington wins tonight. I think they're the better club. I give Tampa a ton of credit for drawing the penalties and executing on the power play. But 5-on-5, the way the Capitals have played, we talked about it a couple weeks ago before the Derby, that if Ovechkin and the Capitals can get the giant gorilla off their back that is Crosby and the Penguins, look out. Well, they finally figured it out. They beat the Penguins. They finally, Charlie Brown finally got to loose. He finally kicked the football. Now you play off that momentum. You get the 2-0 lead on the road. Tonight's the pivotal game. Either you make this a meat grinder or you make it easy street. I think the Capitals find a way to win a close game tonight, and they end up winning the series in 5 or 6.
I actually think the Capitals need to win tonight. If you drop two at home and it's going back to Tampa, you blew a 2-0 lead. Now all those memories from years past of Pittsburgh start creeping back into Ovechkin's head, and it starts to feel like here we go again. But I do believe that Washington is the better team. Tonight it's projected that Backstrom will be back. Let's not forget, they knocked out the Penguins and took a 2-0 lead without one of their better players, Backstrom. I think he'll help on the power play. Mm-hmm. And he comes back in a big way today. I think Washington's game to win or lose.
Good take. Last one. From a Wild standpoint, BAU first. KGU first. You work with the, you were very close to the team. And I'm not, this is not the slings and arrows of outrageous negativity.
Right.
Because I'm cherry picking because it's easy because they're dead. We never should have traded Alex Tuch.
Well, it's easy now in the rearview mirror. I think that the Columbus Blue Jackets might have wanted to have Wild Bill Carlson, too. I mean, there's about 20 GMs right now that are looking, I wonder if the Penguins are thinking better with Fleury or better without Fleury. I mean, everybody has that rearview mirror, like hindsight's 20/20. You know, you can stand, the Howell thing doesn't surprise anybody. I mean, anybody that watched him play for the Wild knew if he got a different role where he was on a top couple of lines, we saw him play with the Gophers. The kids always had the speed and skill to go out there. That doesn't surprise me. The Tuck one hurts. I mean, it does. I mean, from a Wild fan's perspective, it hurts. I mean, the kid is big. He's got upside. And when he played for the Wild, you didn't see this side of his game. What I give them all credit for in Las Vegas is they all have taken a giant step forward. You don't think Washington wouldn't mind having Nate Schmidt on that power play with Nick Backstrom? I mean, every GM can sit back and play that game right now.
Yeah.
To Vegas' credit, they found a team that gets along, that has chemistry, that all has a chip on their shoulder, every single night, Brian, goes to the rank saying, I want to show them just one more time what they're missing. And they may just ride this thing all the way through to a Stanley Cup. It's been amazing to watch.
These guys have banded together, bonded together based on being released. That's what they're riding on. They are a group of pissed off guys that weren't wanted. I mean, look at Carlson. He's one of their leading point getters all season long. He had 9 goals the last 2 years for Columbus. You don't think Columbus wants him back? They're all the GMs are looking back and saying, what could have been?
Appreciate you, B.A. Great work. See you at the racetrack tomorrow night. KG, likewise, see you this weekend. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
KG, B.A., P.A., 9 to noon.
You're listening to P.A.
If you surround yourself with turds, you're headed towards Turdville. If you surround yourself with elite people, you are headed towards elite things.
On the Fan.
I can't wait until tomorrow. Cause tomorrow might very well be too late.
Just a quick reminder for your Thursday, you can listen to Lavelle with us every Monday. We talk baseball. And Lavelle's Hot Stick of the Week. It's brought to you by Clement's Sausage Company. And you can register for your chance to win a year's supply of Clement's Snack Sticks from your local Cub Foods. You just get to KFAN.com. Use the keyword contests.
Friday football feast tomorrow, and I'm already excited. The co-host, per usual, Paul Charchian. The legalization of sports gaming, I think, will be addressed right out of the gate. It's something that I know Paul has opinions on, not only locally, but nationally. Also tomorrow, our annual call to Bud Grant at his place in Bloomington, where he's having the annual Bud Grant garage sale. We called him last year, chatted with him for about 10, 15 minutes. Do the same thing tomorrow. Also on tomorrow's show, Cheryl Reeve, coach of the Minnesota Lynx. She'll be on at about 10:15. And the Burke Bit is in studio. Matt Burke tomorrow, courtesy of no-name butcher quality meats. Matt Burke in studio tomorrow at 10:55. As I have shared in passing today and walking up to the show, the shows this week, I saw Daryl Hall and John Oates for like a 31st time last night. Near the end of the show, as I said earlier, Daryl Hall said to the crowd, look, paraphrasing, look, I'm not blowing smoke up your bleeps. This was a great night, and you have been the best crowd on tour. Thank you very much. Now, I've seen this band enough, and I know enough about this band to know that that was heartfelt and it was genuine, and the 72-year-old Vox genuinely meant it, because they, you know, from Scott Trade in St. Louis to Staples Center to these big arenas they play with Train as the opening act, they get, you know, anywhere between 10 and 21,000 people per show. But they are not all as engaged as the XL Energy Center crowd was last night. I was in the 14th row, right in the center, and really everybody all in my section back 30 rows, everybody stood up every second of every song and was very, very engaged. And, you know, the Daryl Hall recognized that, as did John Oates, and credited the crowd. I guess this would be skull stories or soul stories for me. For me, at age 52, at this stage of my life, my attachment to this band mostly is because it's the only common thread I have in my life that runs like 40 years. Outside of my kids, I have no family here. My mom introduced me to this music and the live show experience in 1978 when I was 12, and she died 12 summers ago. So I go to see the band because it has been a common thread of happiness for me for 40 years. The majority of people with whom I interacted last night were, they knew Maneater, Kiss on My List, Private Eyes, You Make My Dreams, She's Gone, Sarah Smile, Say It Isn't So, Out of Touch, Wait for Me, the cool Train songs, that they were all there to see the hits. And Daryl Hall and John Oates have forever been very good at paying off the crowd by doing the hits. And the crowd thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because it has been common thread happiness for me for 40 years. I mean, there are so many unique stories during that 40-year run that, A, I don't want to narrow cast, but B, I don't have time to share them all. Skull stories, soul stories. Like, in 1984, me and my high school best friend, Ricky Rodriguez, we went to see Daryl Hall and John Oates at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles. And in 84, the year I graduated from high school, we waited for 2 hours after a show to meet them, and it happened. And at that time, at age 17 or 18, that was big, you know, because like Maneater had just come out, the H2O album was big, MTV was relatively new, they were huge on MTV. We waited 2 hours, skipped school the next day, and instead went body surfing at Huntington Beach and shared stories from the show we had seen and the icons we had met the night before. 1994, Skull Story, Soul Stories. I'm by myself at Caesars Tahoe in South Lake Tahoe. 1994, waiting for friends to arrive. It's 1 a.m. It's a lounge bar at Caesars Tahoe in South Lake Tahoe. The house act is singing the Daryl Hall and John Oates great song, Rich Girl. I was there to see Daryl and John the next night at said establishment. So it's like 1 in the morning, lounge bar, house band. Daryl Hall and his bass player, the late Tom T-Bone Walk, they walk in the lounge while they're playing Rich Girl. I'm like, wow, there's Daryl Hall. They had security with them, so like people didn't mob them because 94, they were still quite popular. Shoot, they were popular last night at ages 72 and 70, John Oates being 70. And to catch this at 1 in the morning, South Lake Tahoe, Caesars Tahoe, T-Bone Walk and Daryl proceeded to play 7 songs with the house band.
They just jumped up on stage?
Jumped up. They were invited up by like the Julius Collins of Caesars Tahoe.
Yeah.
And no Hall & Oates songs, mostly Marvin Gaye and the Temptations.
Oof.
I remember they did Papa Was a Rolling Stone. He did a really obscure Marvin Gaye song called like When Did I Start Loving You, or When Did You Start Loving Me? Something like that. I'll never forget it. Skull Stories, Soul Stories, and why through 40 years this is a common thread of happiness for me. 1999-ish, Minneapolis. I got tipped off from my friend Greg, who was a mechanic for Northwest Airlines. Daryl and John were playing a Northwest Airlines appreciation party at the convention center in Minneapolis, so I knotted up the tie and sneaked in. It's kind of a stuffy party. Daryl and John collecting somewhere in the neighborhood of $125 to perform at the appreciation party. Everybody's sitting at their tables. Announcer heads right up to the stage. They play, I'm 2 feet from John Oates. They play 3 songs, 4 songs. I look at Daryl Hall because it was quiet and they could actually hear what you're saying. And I said to Daryl Hall, this is an airlines party. You have to play Las Vegas Turnaround, the stewardess song. And then he looks up and looks out at the crowd and goes, this is an airlines party. We can do that. Turnaround, 3, 2, Sarah's off on a turnaround. So they played Las Vegas Turnaround, and I was unbelievably happy because I had just changed the set list of the greatest duo in the history of music. Skull Stories, Soul Stories. So many Skull Stories, so many Soul Stories. I've seen all of the songs live a million times. So like they did a super obscure song last night called Is It a Star? Nobody's ever heard Is It a Star. Bossberg has, I have. That was the song where I danced the most, snapped my fingers the most. I know all the words. I know all the words to all of their songs. So it's like Rube Nation really was appreciating and enjoying the Wednesday evening out with family and or friends. To Maneater, You Make My Dreams, Kiss on My List, Rich Girl, Private Eyes. I'm like, Wait for Me with Patrick Monahan, in Is It a Star? Nobody knows that. I love it, in. Moments like that brought the 40-year common thread of happiness to fruition for me. Because those who listen daily had heard me bitch up to the show saying Daryl Hall's voice just isn't what it used to be when Mick Jagger said in the mid-80s, that guy is the greatest voice in the history of music. And there even was a time this time last year where I told people I'm never going to see them again. I can't do it anymore. The band and the guy mean too much to me for me to hear that. Well, I'm genuinely glad that I went last night because I was very proud of the performance they put on. I've seen all of their songs live a zillion times. People, jobs, stories come and go. This band always has been there for four decades. Thus, my appreciation, admiration, and dedication. Thanks for listening. We'll feast tomorrow.
9 to noon show wraps brought to you by the Paddy Wagon, 61st and Nicollet, the Paddy Wagon. All this horse betting chatter has negative Dave shook, looking under couches for coins at the sports book. Why on earth would we let him back on the show? King of bad luck, lonesome loser, never wears clean clothes. Tomorrow is a feast. Charge brings his duffel bag filled with elite takes, a nightlight and a ball gag. We'll have the Burke bit for an NFL heat check. I'll be here pushing buttons and swabbing the poop deck. Thanks to Lieber for adding pop, even though his favorite song happens to be Mbop. Gorgon Aragoni, all analysis, they never stop. Happy anniversary to my wife. I'm sorry, I'm a flop.
The negative.
Oh my God!
Hold on to your butts.
I love it, baby! Woo! Yes!
Good time!
Anytime you need a payment.
Good time! Anytime.
9 to noon.
When you're hot, you're high.
When you can.
Temporary layoffs.
Not much else to say.
Easy credit rip-offs.
Good son of a.
Scratching and surviving.
Time for two more.
So that would be an L for today.
Ain't we lucky we got them?
P.A.
Good time.
If it's good news or money, leave a message.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.